You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey yo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show presented by PointsBet. Use promo code CHGO when you sign up to get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. Welcome into the winner's lounge. That's a White Sox winner, 4-1. The boys close it out the right way after last night's embarrassing loss. Great to see the White Sox bounce back. They improve to 15-14 on the season. The Guardians fall to 15-15. Welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show. I am Sean Anderson. You can follow me on Twitter at Sean_W_Anderson. The man over there in the actual studio. I guess he's that way.
That way, yeah.
That way. Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. He's the CHGO White Sox community leader. How you doing, Herb? How's the White Sox win treating you?
Oh, it feels so much better than a loss. This is yes. Great. Did you know, Sean, this is the White Sox first win over the Guardians ever?
Ever.
Ever.
That's crazy. Yeah, and I want to talk to you real quick because we had the whole, you know, Guardians jar with the whole, you know, name change. I don't even know if I appreciate it. Steve Stone's inability to actually call them the Guardians is one of my most watched storylines of the past games, just because he is very, you know, if he calls them the other team, the old team that he grew up, knowing their dead name, he immediately says, well, that's what they were called. And it's like, well, Steve, you know, they are called the Guardians now. If you look up Lucas Giolito on Baseball Reference, it says his stat line versus the Cleveland Guardians, not the Cleveland, you know, other team. So I have one gripe with that. I don't know how that treats you when you still hear that name.
Been living 70 plus years with that team be called in the Indians, you know, grew up in the area, rooted for him as a child. So I can feel it. I don't think he has any hard and fast, he doesn't grip onto the Indians' name and doesn't want to change, like Chicagoans don't want to call Sears Tower Willis Tower type of thing. But, you know, he's an older man. I give him a little break. But do you see who's back? Our guy Eli is back.
Oh, my God, he is. Feels good to win, says Eli Stein, who's over in Israel. It's probably 7 a.m. over there. He's going to bed at 9 p.m., waking up at 3 a.m. To watch the CHGO White Sox pregame show. I wonder what Eli's going to do tomorrow for a 12:30 pregame show for the White Sox and Guardians as they take on 110. And, again, I'm not mad at Stoney for using it. It's just, like, his staunchness to be like, well, that's what they used to be called. And it's like, yeah, we
see
know
who else is with us today. Join us again. In, our guy Rick Giolito, which his son absolutely shoved. I mean, as I always say, I don't worry when Dylan Cease goes to the bump, and I don't worry when Lucas Giolito goes to the bump. Thank you, Rick, for joining us. You raised a great son just off the field, and he happens to be a champion on the field too.
Well, it sounds like a perfect time to just start off. Let's go into Lucas Giolito's start and what he did against the Cleveland Guardians, because we talked about it today. Going into today, 63 innings pitched against the Guardians, 14 earned runs allowed. He does allow an earned run tonight. That goes to 70 innings pitched tonight for Lucas Giolito and 15 earned runs allowed against Cleveland. He has been dominant versus the Cleveland baseball team. Tonight, he goes 7 innings pitched, 1 earned run allowed, 6 hits allowed, 1 walk surrendered, and 5 Ks. The K number was down, but overall, outside of the Josh Naylor home run, Lucas Giolito was fantastic.
I mean, think about it. I talked the other day about Michael Kopech understanding how to use his pitches, the economy, don't need to strike everybody out. And we see this from Lucas Giolito. Can he strike 10 Guardians out? Yeah. But a shorter outing would be had right there. He understands quick outs. Let's get them to hit the ball into the ground, do what I want them to do so I can go seven innings. He struggled a little bit in that seventh inning and then found it. Like, he couldn't find his release point on some of the balls, and they were hitting him a little bit, you know, not hard contact or anything like that. But then Ethan Katz came out, told him, say, hey, man, these are your last pitches here. Let's do it. And you see he sat home dude down for his fifth strike out of the game, seven strong innings. Enjoy your solo home run, Josh Naylor. I think that's all that Lucas gives up, solo home runs. He is a champion. When you need a guy, you need the ball to be given to a guy on the White Sox, it's going to be a great problem to have. But you know the guy I'm choosing. 2-7 is the guy I'm picking.
Hey, I mean, we've been getting a lot of praise out recently, which is a good thing. Dylan Cease has been phenomenal. Kopech was phenomenal last night. And Lucas Giolito, you finally get to see what he is at 100%. It really felt like he was 100% Lucas Giolito tonight, fully over the injury that kept him out. And even then, when he came back from that injury, he was really good in his first start against the Twins. He was good against the Cubs in that start. But like you mentioned, he gave up home runs to Horner in that game. I think he gave up a home run to Wisdom as well. Yeah. And then that Angels game, he gave up two home runs. So, I mean, it wasn't perfect, coming off the IL, but tonight was as close as perfect as you can get from Lucas Giolito, even including the Josh Naylor home run.
69%. And before we keep on going, yeah, Rick says Lucas had a different plan because those Cleveland hitters are difficult to K. They're a bunch of contact hitters. And yeah, that's a smart guy. That's a guy who knows the opponent he's going in. He studies them. He says, okay, I saw seven from Michael Kopech. That's tough because he's a strikeout pitcher. But you know what? I'm going to get him out a different way. Cruising throughout the game, opposite field home run versus one of the hottest hitters. Jesus Christ, that Josh Naylor. Just get it. Whatever. Who cares? Enjoy yourself. Yeah.
We'll talk about Naylor. Don't get too ahead of yourself. Let's focus on Giolito because, him. You know, I hate him too. I hate Naylor so much.
He's so good.
You got to give him respect because that's the thing. I was trashing him before, you know, he started being good. I was trashing him before this whole 2022 thing started off. And now he's doing it. Now I can't, you know, I got to shut my mouth because, I mean, he almost took off Graveman's shin in that ninth inning there. But Lucas Giolito was elite tonight. And the plan that he had tonight absolutely worked versus the Cleveland Guardians. 69% strike rate for Lucas. 20 first pitch strikes to 26 batters. That is elite right there. 27% whiff rate for Lucas Giolito. Again, elite stuff from him on that one. He was just fantastic to watch tonight. And there were two swings I just want to talk about, Herb. You know, yeah. there was many swings. The Josh Naylor one was nice. But there was one swing, I think it was in Ramirez's second at-bat. He throws a changeup to Ramirez, and Ramirez throws the bat towards the Cleveland dugout. And then the next time, Rosario ends up getting a hit on this one, I'm pretty sure, in the seventh inning. But Rosario truly spins around in the batter's box. The changeup's been working, but the fact that he's got two changeups that they talk about in the broadcast, where when he could throw one up high using the more of the palm of his hand, and then the other one where he more snaps down and that one goes lower in the zone, it's unfair. And, I mean, guys who have seen him multiple times, Jose Ramirez, who is a great batter, can still elicit swings like that. I mean, that is just ace stuff. You'd love to see it from Lucas.
Made hitters look silly. I thought that Rosario, like, twisted his ankle on that one. He was trying to go for the down so much. Lucas like, oh, here's a high changeup out of the zone. Enjoy yourself. Because he knew. He's like, come on, man. I know you're looking dead red. I'm not that guy. I'm a great pitcher. And so it's good to see. And I just looked it up. It looks like all the home runs that Lucas Giolito has given up are also home runs so far. So, yeah. If you can do that, and Rick says, you know, home runs are a product of being in the zone all the time, and that's what you want to be. We're talking the other day about Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech having the confidence to know that you can throw the ball wherever you need to throw the ball. These guys are not going to hit it. Maybe he didn't have his premium stuff. Yeah, pretty good stuff today. And even if he doesn't, you remember that time where he was getting hit hard early in the Angels game? And those two solo home runs, he bears down. I think he gets mad. Maybe at himself, maybe at the other opponents, especially last year when Josh Donaldson was blaming him about the sticky stuff. He got pissed and finished the Twins off last year. This year, with the Angels hitting those two solo home runs in the first inning, didn't give up another one until I think the sixth inning, gave up three in that game. So he is the guy. He is our ace. And we've been talking all about Cease and Kopech. Which one we are we looking forward to as our ace going forward? Lucas is like, hey, hold on, y'all. I'm still here. Stop it. Stop it. It's me. It's 2-7.
Yeah. And you know, I love to see it. I mean, I've talked about it. I mean, we talked about it earlier. Like the game that turned him from Lucas Giolito, worst pitcher in baseball in 2018, was against this Cleveland team back in May of 2019, where he had a very similar performance. 7 innings, 8 Ks, no earned runs allowed. And I do want to talk a little bit about the stuff just a little bit more. Let's look at his pitch mix because, you know, you see Dave saying Hawk would gush over that changeup. You know, Ryan saying Lucas' change was sick tonight. He was making his hitters swing out of their shoes. He was fantastic with that fastball and changeup. Just elite stuff right there. 7 whiffs on his changeup, 64% whiff rate on his changeup. He got 11 swings, seven of them just completely missed the ball completely. That was great to see. And I also saw something too. I think it was Blank Name said that's actually pretty crazy that Giolito had such a high whiff rate and such few strikeouts. The thing is, you know, Cleveland's a fantastic team. They have a very, very low K rate, one of the lowest in the major leagues. I think the one thing that he needs to get over a lineup like that is that slider and curveball working at its best. We saw Josh Naylor tag a slider for a home run, and the curveball wasn't perfect. I would love to see him start lowering or, you know, making sure that curveball is a little bit lower in the zone. I think he threw one that was actually truly below the belt. A lot of them are left high. He needs to start snapping down on that curveball. That curveball is really, you know, it's a show pitch at this point, because you go back to the graphic, only one called strike. No whiff at all at that pitch. It's just not a pitch that is going to be conducive to getting outs. It really hasn't been this year. So I don't love that, but you see 30% called strike whiff rate on a slider, 41% on his changeup, 43% on his fastball. All of that is elite stuff. So he's got 3 pitches right there. That's enough to have, you know, an ace performance like he did tonight.
And with the curveball, like you just said, I think maybe just a show pitch, or he wants to, you know, fastball is elevated, changeups sometimes are elevated, and the curveball is like, you know, hey, I got to show it to you. I have to show it to you just so you're off of my other pitches, you know. I'm not too worried, and I know you want better. You want, like Cy Young, the best in the game type of stuff from Cy Giolito. Lucas Giolito, I keep getting Rick's name here, right here. He said this year's curveball is last year's slider, which he shelved, if I think famously. He shelved his changeup and then went to his slider. So he's kind of working on his curveball. So if that's what you're saying, Rick, I think right here, stay right here. If he gives me this all year long, I'm happy for it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Cleveland was just missing cookies. They were flummoxed. They didn't know what Lucas does. As Jose Ramirez is to the White Sox, and lately Josh Naylor is to the White Sox, Lucas Giolito is that to the Guardians. But he's an actual great player, not like Josh Naylor, who just runs into a couple last night and then tonight.
Yeah, and I lost my train of thought here. But with you got to help me out. You threw me off for a second.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're all good. I don't know. I feel very dumb right now. I truly
don't feel dumb.
My train of thought. Let me look at my notes, Herb. Let me scramble and look at my notes.
Don't even trip, man. I think the White Sox needed that victory for themselves. It got dicey. It got real dicey in the ninth inning. I know we're gonna talk more about the eighth inning, where I was expecting Kendall Graveman. And a lot of the White Sox fans are like, where's Kendall Graveman? Now, he said before the game he's available. So they put Jose Ruiz out there, didn't get the job done fully, got 2 outs. Then Bennett Sousa gets the out of Jose Ramirez in the eighth. And so when Kendall Graveman comes out for the ninth, you realize that Liam wasn't available. Kendall closed it out. Got a little hairy. It got really, really hairy in that ninth inning. And Rick Giolito answers our question. Yes, his curveball will be elite. Just needs time. He didn't throw it at all in 2 years ago. He'll up the percentage over the time. So that's what he's working on. I mean, that's a That's a guy who's working in a pitch in a game, and he's trying to perfect it. Like, that is that takes balls to do.
Well, and it makes sense, because the more you look at it, on 0-0 counts, he used the curveball four times. And that's something that I think that he should use. If he's trying to gain confidence in that pitch, 0-0 is something that, you know, that's where he wants to use that curveball. Most guys are going to be looking fastball in that count. You throw a curveball, most of the time, it's a free strike. There's this pitch. This is writer Nick Pollock, who writes pitcherlist.com, and he talks about, you know, breaking balls on 0-0 counts are easily, you know, just a strike for most pitchers. So I wonder if Lucas is just working that in as well, because four of his seven pitches that when he used the curveball came on an 0-0 count. So we'll see if it does become an elite pitch. If he's able to develop four pitches like that, I mean, you're truly looking at Cy Young stuff. But I mean, even here, the three pitches that he has is Cy Young level. Last year, the highest percentage he reached with this curveball was 4% thrown by a month. June, July, August all topped out last year at 4%. He was at 8% this year. So he's still upping the percentage. We'll see how that, you know, changes throughout May, June, and August. It's something to follow with Giolito. But any final thoughts with Giolito? I think that was all I had on his great start tonight.
I just look forward to his next start. I mean, it's going to be probably Sunday night or Sunday afternoon versus the Yankees, an elite team, a team that can hit a lot. Let's see what he can do versus them. I don't know if he sees this as a measuring stick or just another game in May. I don't know his mindset, but I'm looking forward to every time he goes out to the pitch. And as I said, I'm not worried about him. I'm never worried about Lucas Giolito. He is the best pitcher the White Sox have. And that's a lot to say, because this team is loaded with arms.
Yeah, this team is loaded with arms, and one of them is still on the IL, and that guy finished third in Cy Young voting. So I think we always forget to mention the injuries, just because you still have Eloy Jimenez injured, you still have Andrew Vaughn injured, you still have Lance Lynn injured. I mean, there are still reinforcements on the way for the White Sox, and that is one of the most intriguing storylines about this team heading into the next couple of months. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. If you do that right now, you get two risk-free bets up to $2,000. That's not it. If you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from the CHGO locker. That's $2,000 in free bets, a free CHGO membership, and a free t-shirt from the CHGO locker, all for making more than a $50 first-time deposit at PointsBet. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. Herb, on PointsBet today, I went 4 of 5 in my picks, up to $95 in my bank. We talk about our picks on CHGO Bets Daily. I'm finally winning money.
And if you guys don't know, like, you're like, $95, that's nothing.
It feels good.
Sean is a $2 to $3 guy, so $95 is like $1 million. He's winning a lot of bets.
Right. And I won Cal Quantrill under 4.5 strikeouts. The White Sox now have 29 games and only 5 starters. Their opposing starters have gone over 5 strikeouts. So it's a prop that you want to take. Online sign-up is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. When the Sox play tomorrow, when we're previewing that pregame, make sure you have the PointsBet app, because we'll be giving you out picks to help you win money. And also, if you want to start your day with a competitive edge, Travis CBD Coffee is a game changer and has helped thousands of people to help improve their overall wellness and quality of life. Strava delivers delicious, fresh-roasted specialty coffee infused with organic broad-spectrum CBD. CBD from hemp doesn't make you high or hungry, but it offers real benefits that can help you. It can help you feel alert and focused without the jitters. It can help you live your day more balanced with less anxiety and fewer aches and pains. Plus, introducing CBD in your daily routine can help you enjoy a more restful sleep so you wake up feeling your best. My favorite is having the decaffeinated Strava CBD coffee before I go to bed. The 20 milligrams of CBD helped me get that truly restful sleep. The best part, Strava is all about quality. Everything is small batch, fresh and shipped straight to your door. Strava also offers concentrated full spectrum CBD tinctures for those looking for a more traditional CBD format with a powerful entourage effects of benefits. CHGO listeners can save 25% off their entire order when you use code CHGO25. 25. That's 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com. When you use code CHGO25 at checkout, discount coupon valid on non-subscription purchases only, one use per customer. And if you already love Strava, you can subscribe and save with the Strava Coffee Club. With Strava, you're in control. You can save on your favorite coffees and have them automatically delivered to your home or office on your preferred schedule. Again, the code is CHGO25 for 25% off your entire order at StravaCraftCoffee.com.
All right, and Greg, no, I'm not going crazy. I'm talking to, and for the people who are listening on the podcast the next day, we really appreciate you listening. We're broadcasting live right after the White Sox won against the Cleveland Guardians 4-1. And so during that read right there that Sean did right there with Strava Coffee, I'm talking to our producer, Stephen Nicholas, behind the glass. Or he's not really behind the glass. He's just behind this computer that I'm reading from. We have a couple super chats, and then that's what he was informing you, that we have some super chats. My guy, Matthew Cortese. See, I can't say that name without saying it that way, and I think it's offensive. I'm sorry, Matthew. Matthew Cortese.
Matthew super chat. Cortese.
Gorlami. Thank you for $5. And we had one from Stupid Donkey in the pregame right after we closed out. So, Stupid Donkey, if you're still watching, thank you for your super chat. Really appreciate it.
All
right.
Grandma, don't eat all that gabagool. It's all filled with nitrates. Gabagool over here. All right.
Now you're going way too far. Golly. I thought I was being
We got Vinny in.
We got Vinny in. We did all the super chats. We talked to Lucas Giolito's dad, and now it's time to talk to our favorite beat writer, the CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him on Twitter, at Vinny Duber. Our guy, how's it going, Vinny?
What's up, guys? I love me some gabagool. Ooh, amazing on the old Italian sub. You don't get better than that.
We have a super chat from Matthew Cortese. He said that you pronounce his name like Scorsese, and we're seeing if we're being offensive. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you are. Okay. Super Chat, isn't that? That's the guy who rapped on Fly by Sugar Ray, right?
He just wanted to fly, you know?
And Vinny, the man. Rick Giolito says hello. He says, Vinny.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
How's his son doing? Did you talk to Lucas Giolito after his 7-inning outing?
I did. He's happy that he went 7. Of course, he wanted to go 9. That's how these starting pitchers are doing it these days. But listen, I think this is going to be a running theme throughout my appearance tonight. But starting pitchers are back a little bit. You know, it's been a month of getting used to things after the shortened spring training. And I think now they're kind of back to normal. They're kind of back to what you expect. And this White Sox starting rotation is certainly delivering in the results department of late, particularly that Lucas Giolito, Dylan Cease, Michael Kopech triumvirate. So this is kind of more like it when it comes to the starting pitching for the White Sox here after they kind of had to find their way there in April.
I just want to say now, I hope your ears aren't burning up, because Lucas Giolito was apparently talking about you at dinner the other day, according to Rick Giolito. This is mainly just Rick interviewing you or just telling us things to tell you. So I don't know. Maybe you know, you could mention that, you know, Lucas's dad's hanging out with us. But with Lucas going 7 innings, you see a great performance from Vince Velasquez on Friday for the Sox. You see a great performance on Saturday from Dylan Cease. Great performance from Dallas Keuchel on Sunday. You mentioned it. The starting pitchers are back. Michael Kopech yesterday, Lucas today. You know, obviously Johnny Cueto is going to be put into this mix, but is it sort of them finding a groove at this point? Is that what you're saying the collective vibe of the starting pitchers is?
Yeah, a little bit, but I think more so I'm just talking about, you know, workload. I'm talking about kind of, you know, what, you know, it was such a mystery of what they were going to be able to do in April coming off of just a 3-week spring training. And that's why you saw so much work by the bullpen, right? Was because these guys weren't able to go 7 innings in a game. But now they're kind of back to normal. They got their legs under them, and this is kind of what you expect from the starting pitching, especially a team like the White Sox, where, you know, you just look to last season and the starting rotation is what carried them. And you're seeing it again here in this recent stretch, even in a game last night that ended the way it did in such, you know, disappointing fashion for so many White Sox fans. Michael Kopech was excellent in that game, and it got kind of overshadowed. So even the guy who's on the workload limit is turning in the 6 innings that, you know, you expect from a starting pitcher. So, yeah, they're kind of passing the baton right now and feeding off of each other.
Did anybody talk about, I know Lucas watches every tape and he studies and he knows his numbers versus the Guardians. it seems like he has supreme confidence every time he goes out to the bump. But he say something about, like, you know, when I see the Cleveland Guardians, you know, I just feel good because he's given up, what, 6 earned runs in the last couple years against the Cleveland Guardians, where every other White Sox pitcher is like, these guys are the greatest.
I mean, hey, I think you mentioned it there, Herb. He has that confidence every time he goes out. And I think there are a lot of these White Sox players that definitely feel that way, be they pitchers or hitters or you know, fielders sometimes too. I mean, it's kind of a hallmark of that clubhouse. And I think that, you know, no matter what team they're facing up there, Lucas is going to have that confidence to go out and mow guys down. And tonight, obviously, with the way Cleveland kind of attacks pitchers, he wasn't racking up the strikeouts, but he was just as effective, even though, you know, it did seem, though, we did hear the Lido shuffle bit quite a bit tonight. You know, so there was plenty of Boz Skaggs. Usually they only do that for like the first 2 or 3 strikeouts. They kind of, you know, lose the shtick as Lucas's appearances go on. But tonight they were right on it. Like everyone. Lido. Whoa. So yeah. So Boz Skaggs was ringing throughout the rate pretty
I would rather go with the Lowdown by Boz Skaggs, but whatever. I know why they do it, though. It's a much better song.
And I think that's maybe your new little task here when you're at the G rate and Lucas is pitching. Maybe you give a report card. After every K, you say, you know, 1 out of 2 times they've played the Lido shuffle. I'd be interested in those stats.
You need it out in the outfield. Get some folks with some signage. It's not the K counter. It's the Boz Skaggs counter.
I know a couple guys. I know a couple guys who would love to do that bit. So maybe we'll get on it and have the Lido shuffle counter out in left field. I want to talk to you about something that happened pregame. You sent us some quotes from Tim Anderson talking about the defense and how he's trying to put it behind him. Made a nifty play with Josh Harrison, turning a double play in that game, and also had a great day at the plate. What was TA's comments before the game, and how do you think that influenced or maybe showed itself tonight, if it did?
It's funny, you know, we were pestering him pretty good pregame about the defense and about the errors and everything. And he was making some comments that, you know, wow, you guys are kind of asking me the same question over and over again. And, you know, it didn't seem like he was too thrilled to be talking about it. And then the first thing I asked him postgame was, well, you shut us up, didn't you? And he said, yeah, he said, basically, yeah. So, and he even threw in a little thing. You know, we were asking him, you know, you made some great plays. You got some hits. You're running the bases out there. And he said, yeah, it was a good one. Hope everybody's happy is what he said. So, you know, I think TA likes proving guys wrong, likes proving folks wrong. And certainly you saw tonight, you know, I think everybody saw kind of those quotes from him and were like, oh, that's you know, interesting. You know, we don't know if the, you know, if that's really explains everything that's going on. It shows you how quick that switch can flip and how quick that stuff can become ancient history.
And speaking of proving people wrong, Sean and I both said that if anybody deserves to go down before this series, we both thought that was Gavin Sheets over Jake Berger. I understand why they did it because of handedness. Gavin Sheets has more versatility, especially in the outfield. Gavin Sheets 2 days in a row has delivered home runs. What did he get to say or other people say about Gavin Sheets? It seems like after the home run yesterday, just elation, just a lift off of his shoulders. Today, another big, huge home run. Did you speak to Gavin or anybody else that spoke about him?
Yeah, we did talk to him, and I think it was, you know, I asked the question. These guys always say, you know, it just takes one so often. He got the one yesterday. He's got another one tonight, and he said, yeah, it's a little bit contagious. He's feeling good. I asked him if he was energized by what happened yesterday, and he said, yeah. And, you know, he thought that he was kind of, you know, a little off at the plate, maybe, you know, missing some fastballs that he usually does damage on. And he's kind of, you know, maybe it only takes one to dial back in. And so, yeah, he's proven folks wrong too. That blast tonight was a big one, man. That, I mean, if the goose was still out,
I was about
there,
to say.
it'd be shooting beer right out of that beak.
It was such a missed opportunity. You deserve royalties in perpetuity. I mean, it really was a missed opportunity from them. And so I thought of it immediately. It was the saddest honk that I've ever heard let out. I want to talk a little bit about the ninth inning. I was a little confused seeing Jose Ruiz and then Bennett Souza in the eighth. Then we see it makes a little bit more sense. Kendall Graveman comes out in the ninth inning. So Liam has the day off. Can you talk a little bit about Liam having the day off? And then Graveman, I know you talked a little bit to him before the game about his availability. Obviously, he was available tonight.
Okay, guys, I'm serious. This is a non-issue. It's a non-issue, and I'm going to explain why, but I'm the mind is boggled why people were so up in arms, be it last night about Graveman, and then tonight, Graveman comes in, you get what you want, and then you're mad that Liam Hendricks isn't pitching. My mind is boggled, but I'm going to tell you what is going on here. We talked to Kendall Graveman at length before the game. And guys, that shortened spring training that I brought up earlier, talking about the starting pitchers, that is a wrench that has been thrown into the machine here in 2022. And you have seen Kendall Graveman and that entire White Sox bullpen and probably every bullpen in baseball pitching a lot more than they are used to. Graveman told us earlier today, he looked up recently, he was on pace to throw 93 innings. You know how many he threw last year? 56. So he was on pace to almost double the amount of innings that he was about to throw. And I got people tweeting at me, why hasn't he pitched in so long? It had been three games. He just didn't pitch in three straight games. I mean, I understand the whole video game mentality of it's the eighth inning. It's a three-run or less game. That one guy who is the setup guy has to come in because this is his situation. Same for the ninth and a guy like Liam Hendricks, who's your closer, right? It's not how things work in real life. It's not how things work during the season. They're not going to be able to pitch every game. Now, another part of that is that the White Sox have been playing a lot of close games, right? There's been a lot of games in which they haven't scored more than four runs, as we've been talking about all season long. But they've won a good number of those, too. And so those pitchers have had to be called into duty. They have to be called into duty when the starters can only go five or six innings. Another thing that Tony La Russa has brought up multiple times and that Kendall brought up today when we're talking is if you're going to have a World Series winning bullpen, it can't be three guys. You have to have a team, and they're happy that they've been able to see quality results from Foster, Sousa, and Ruiz specifically, as well as some other guys. Now, does this mean that in Game 7 of the World Series, should the White Sox get there, it's the ninth inning, and, Kendall and Liam pitched the last 2 days, so Bennett Sousa go out there and try to win the World Series for us? No, that's not what it means. But you got to remember, if your two of your most important arms on your pitching staff are burnt out come September, that is not a recipe to make a deep playoff run. And I understand the games count just as much now as they do at the end of the season, but it's not setting yourself up for failure when it matters most, right? I think that is the idea here. They keep talking about it with Michael Kopech. They're doing it with other players. We've been talking about it with Yasmani Grandal, and it applies to a bullpen that has had to work probably more than they normally would in a normal season through the first month of the year.
It was good to see the White Sox capitalize on Guardians errors today. You see the error by Jose Ramirez, immediate home run by Sheets. They talk about their execution there, like making it hurt when they commit errors as other teams have made it hurt when the White Sox do so.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. And I mean, I think people have seen that and been disappointed when the White Sox have done it. I mean, that's the other team succeeding at what they're trying to do. Listen, if you're not going to score a ton of runs, you got to capitalize when they're giving you an opportunity to do so. So I think that you got a situation there in that inning where that wasn't even the only dropped pop-up in foul territory by Cleveland that day. And listen, last night too, by the way, upset people over what the White Sox did in the field. Cleveland didn't look too hot in the field either last night. So the White Sox played great defense tonight. That's what everybody was saying. Tony La Russa walked in here, by the way, unprompted, no question yet, and said, how about that defense? He knew what we were thinking and asking mm-hmm. about before the game. So he was happy to be able to revel in a good defensive night.
Hey, pound your chest, brother. Pound your chest when they do well. That's awesome because we'll kill him when he does poorly or the team does poorly. So your guy Rick Giolito really likes your analysis. Been a ton of high stress innings. It's tough on the starters. Vinny is dead on with his analysis. We've been saying that all along. Now we have confirmation from Rick Giolito. You know, Rick Giolito actually predicted that Dylan Cease was going to have a breakout year last year because of Ethan Katz and what he was doing with him, also with Carlos Rodon. So Rick Giolito knows a thing or two about pitching. So listen to him. Follow him on Twitter.
Hey, he's trying to keep his internet profile low. Apparently, his son gets mad at him for having a
higher profile. I'm not going to talk to Lucas.
That's all I'm letting them know is your secret's safe with us. This is a safe space for Rick Giolito.
No one's watching
whenever you want. That's not true. We got 86 people watching, and there's a bump. We got the Vinny bump. We were at like 60 people. Then Vinny comes in and we're up to 86. So I'm just saying there's a Vinny bump. All right, Vinny. I do have a couple more things I want to talk to you about. I'd love to get more into the socio-political dynamic of, you know, bullpen usage and the fact that you need to have Graveman in the eighth and Hendricks in the ninth. I do like your point. You know, it seems very similar to my Andrew Vaughn thing with Herb. You know, there has to be some day offs for these players at some point. I do want to talk a little bit, though, about Ronaldo Lopez. Any update on Ray Lowe? We saw him leave the game yesterday. No update from the way you're shaking your head.
Yeah, no, he was asked about Tony La Russa was asked about Lopez in the pregame, and there wasn't an update yet. So we'll keep asking. But obviously, yeah, he's been an integral part of that bullpen. So the White Sox would be worse off if they didn't have him available to them. So we'll see what happens there.
I have no more White Sox questions, but I just want to see what your shirt says, Vinny. I can't see it right now.
Oh, boy, this is going to be tough in this tri-screen here. But it's Black Pumas, which is a band that I enjoy. So there you are. That's what that is. They're from Texas, as you can tell. So the people quite good.
People like your wardrobe, and they want to know. They want to be cool like you.
Oh, well, wow.
Not like me. I just wear regular-ass shirts.
Let's get it in writing that I'm being called cool, because that's a few and far between, but we'll take it.
Oh, come on. You're cool, Vinny. All right. Since Herb's done with White Sox questions, I guess I'll make this my final one. I want to go to the run expectancy here. I just want to talk a little bit baseball here with you guys. This is less about, I guess we're using the White Sox as an example here, but it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. We did see Josh Harrison lay down a bunt in the seventh inning with a runner on first base and no outs. So you could see there, runner on first base, no outs. You're expected to get 0.83 runs. And then when you have a runner on second base with one out, you're expected to get 0.6 runs. So right there, you see that you get more runs when you have a runner on first with no outs than you have with a runner on second with one out. Also, Harrison just smoked a double off of Quantrill. So I wonder about you guys, just to understand your baseball sensibilities here. Did you like the move to have Harrison bunt in the seventh, or would you have had him swing away there?
You had to find something to gripe about. Even on a night where everything goes right, you had
Sean,
to find something
always negative
to gripe
Sean.
About. My goodness. Whatever.
I'm just wondering.
It is an opinion that is influenced entirely by the results. That's what I have to say about it. If you lay down a bunt and the bunt works and you score a run, then good. That was the right move. If you lay down a bunt and nobody comes across the plate and you wasted the chance to get drive in with a hit, then you shouldn't have done it. You know what I mean? It's entirely influenced by the results. I get it. I get the percentages. I know what everybody's looking at. In the American League, you probably wouldn't expect to see so much bunting, right? I mean, in the old time National League, where offense was maybe not quite as much the focus, when the pitcher was hitting, that kind of thing, you might see it a little bit more. Not a thing anymore. So we'll see if it goes down. But come on, if you bunt and it works, then it worked. Good job.
All right. Well, I like that answer. What was your go
and
ahead,
it did
Herb.
Work. I mean, I'm not a sacrifice bunt guy. I'm on Sean's thing, but your answer was perfect. That works for me, Vinny. That's the best explain thing about a sacrifice bunt. If it works, it's great. If it doesn't, it's terrible. Perfect.
Well, and Vinny, he's had a long day at the park, and I understand. He doesn't want to have any gripes, especially after last night.
So we'll come back tomorrow.
Go on his merry way, and he has to come back tomorrow. So we will talk to him after tomorrow's Guardians and White Sox game, the rubber match between the two. Go follow Vinny Duber on Twitter, at Vinny Duber, and it's a much earlier night for you leaving the ballpark than last night. So,
It would have to be.
Enjoy your night. Thank you, Vinny, for joining us.
See you guys.
Rick Giolito's going to watch the game now.
Yeah, well,
thank you for joining us, sir.
I don't think it's a coincidence that I bring that up and then he dips immediately, Vinny seemed to roll his eyes that I'm bringing up bunting here as we're kicking him off. It wasn't a gripe. We'll get to it. The best way to support CHGO is to download the PointsBet app and use code CHGO when you sign up. Not only are you going to get 2 risk-free bets up to $2,000, but if you make a $50 or more first-time deposit, you'll receive a free CHGO membership, which unlocks all of our web content, and you'll even get a free shirt of your choice from a CHGO locker. If you have any questions, you can email pointsbet@allchgo.com, and we will help you out. And in case you missed it, online sign-up is available in Illinois. You can download the PointsBet app right now and register your account from start to finish, all from your phone. You'll be signing up with the fastest sportsbook easier than ever, so you can start living your bet life in seconds. So what are you waiting for? Once the game starts, don't just bet. Live your bet life with PointsBet. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. And we do want to mention CHGO. We're giving you the podcast and live shows, the pre-games and post-game shows, all for free here on our YouTube platform, on all of our podcasting platforms that you're listening to or watching to us right now on. But if you want to get the full CHGO experience, become a member at allchgo.com. We have premium written content there for our members, written by guys like Vinny Duber, the guy who was just on. If you want to read his game recap, he talked to TA before the game. He's going to update you on Johnny Cueto. He's going to update you on all the roster moves. Go check out allchgo.com. When you become a member, you get a free shirt when you sign up. We have dope merch for all of our teams: Sox, Bulls, Hawks, Bears, Cubs, Sky, Red, Stars, Fire. Am I missing any of them?
Boom, you got them all, I think.
White Sox, probably. I probably missed the one team that I do a show for. And we also have the members-only Discord, the CHGO Lounge. If you want to talk to CHGO personalities like Herb, me, Vinny, we are in the Discord hanging out, and you can ask us our White Sox questions or any White Sox questions on your mind. So go become a member at allchgo.com. Okay, Herb, Vinny's gone. We can now be mad about bunts. So what do you think about the seventh inning and Harrison laying down a bunt there?
Absolutely terrible. I always hate sacrifice bunts unless you're doing it to score a run. So a suicide squeeze, a safety squeeze, cool. You're scoring a run. Or if that's the decisive run. I do not like giving up outs. You only have 27 of them. Let's try to maximize. Multiple reasons why this one in particular was bad. Adam Engel is fast. He can steal the base by himself.
Right.
You just had Josh Harrison almost take out Mr. Quantrill and hit a double the time before. So he's seen him well. Can we allow him to maybe get a hit there? Turn the lineup over and get TA up there. If he hits into a ground ball double play, that's sometimes what the luck is. But you just showed us the stats. You're giving yourself less of a chance of scoring more runs by giving that other team an out. I'm sure Cal Quantrill was like, please, thank you, Jesus. This man took me to the bridge almost. Holy shit. Thank you for bunting and giving me that free ass out. And then eventually, as Vinny said, it worked out because on 0-2, you have Adam Engel stealing and Timmy with the inside-out swing that goes fair gets a double there. So the run scores. The bunt looks like a success. And Greg Miller, I'm drinking straight water. It is hot as hell up in here, so I have to drink water. And if I take this hat off, you can see a little of that sweat.
Oh, yeah, we see it.
I need to be drinking water to keep me hydrated and, you know, not die.
84 degrees in the studio right now.
84 degrees. 84.
84.
Our you guys, air condition broke today of all days. That shit could have broke like when it was 30 in these studios. That would have been great. But no, it broke today.
Yeah. Leaky roof and broken AC. So it's been a fun time so far at the CHGO offices. I do want to go back to a comment, and this is going to be the last topic on bunting. I feel like I just brought up the numbers and actually didn't even give my opinion. But Pilskin said, bunts put more pressure on the defense. I'm just going to push back on that a little bit. Ahmed Rosario dropped a fly ball in left field yesterday, and he just had a double smoked over his head by Josh Harrison. I don't see a reason why you just paid Josh Harrison $5.5 million to bunt after he just hit a double. That makes no sense to me. Not even giving up the out makes no sense. But the matchup, I mean, you have a favorable matchup against a guy who is losing velocity and losing his ability to spot on the outside. I hate the decision. And, Steven, can we bring up back the run expectancy thing there? There was one more thing that I want to build off of from Jack saying bunting the runner on second to third, much more efficient than first to second, which I think is true. If you go second to third with one zero outs, it's 0.0 runs. And then if you go to third base with one out, it's 0.8 runs. So, you know, it's equivalent to have a runner on third with one out as it is to have a runner on first with no outs. So, I mean, that right there, a sac fly drives in a runner with one out on third base, and a guy who is stranded on first base with no outs has the same expectancy to score. So, I mean, I just don't understand the move to, from a baseball perspective. And that's something that I push back on Tony. Again, it worked because you got the run from TA. Great hitting from TA. That was fantastic to see. And they did figure out Quantrill. 10 hits allowed today. Let's talk about Quantrill's day and get into the White Sox hitting. The one that was, you know, amazing off the bat was Gavin Sheets. I don't know if you want to talk about that right away, but Sheets took a cutter out to where the goose used to be. A great mammoth shot, and that's a second in two games.
Yeah, and I said before the game, the White Sox should score four earned versus Cal Quantrill, and they did it. He was in the game still into the seventh and doing well enough to be in there, but that's not an elite pitcher. That's a good pitcher that's in a starting rotation that can beat you, and he came in with a sub-1 ERA versus the White Sox in various roles as a reliever and as a starter or opener, as mostly the case was for the Cleveland Guardians. It was the Indians last year. So, yeah, I am not afraid when you see Kyle Quantrill and you see those good numbers. You saw the White Sox a little bit more patient today. The first inning notwithstanding, they got his pitch count up a little bit, and they didn't see that guy who showed up last year or the year before in Cleveland. This guy, they know that they can hit him when all the conditions are right. And if he's leaving balls in the middle, Gavin Sheets has got his stroke right now. So it's the right move that they kept him up here, because it seems like that lefty power bat will come in handy later on this year.
So, Steven, let's go to Cal Quantrill. The ball's put in play when there should be three balls on that graphic. And you mentioned him leaving it middle. The one that is darker red, that cutter right there, is the one that Gavin Sheets hit, which is exactly middle. That is the exact zone. It's right over the middle of the plate, right at the belt. He took that and smoked it. The one that is inside out of the zone is the one that TA inside outed to drive in Adam Engel in the situation that we're talking about with the sacrifice bunt in the seventh inning, driving him in from second base. So it was a nice piece of hitting from TA. And then the other one was the run he drove in. Again, middle. He hits it into center field, right up the middle, shoots it up the gap. It was great hitting right there. And let's go to Cal Quantrill to right-handed pitchers. This is where he was throwing mainly. And you mentioned that he is middle a lot. You see a lot middle here against right-handers. And it's mainly because it's cutter, four-seam fastball, and sinker. That's all he threw to right-handed pitchers. And basically his idea was to miss the barrel of White Sox hitters, to keep the velocity the same, but make sure that he's moving in, out. And we call this an east to west pitcher because he's pitching in and out to hitters, not up and down, not high and low to pitchers. And this is where the Sox have actually had their most struggles with. I go back to Daniel Lynch. This is how Daniel Lynch pitched against the White Sox, where he had seven strikeouts. I'm very, very glad to see that they got 10 hits off Cal Quantrill and they had the success that they did against him, because with this map right here, they shouldn't have had so much success. But if he had another breaking ball to throw off some of these hitters, like a slider, then Cal Quantrill could have eaten against the White Sox. But they did damage against Cal Quantrill. They should have done damage. This is good to see them scoring four runs against a guy that, you know, we expected them to do well against.
It's the antithesis of what we are talking about with Lucas Giolito. He has confidence in his pitches, and he has pitches to strike you out. Cal really doesn't have that. The cutter is probably the pitch that can do it, or the sinker, but no one's looking for Cal Quantrill to strike you out. 10 hits tells you exactly what was going on. He probably wasn't confident that he can get these guys out with his stuff. So he's like, I got to let them hit it. And they did hit it to the tune of 10 hits. That's good to see from the White Sox. A complete effort where most of the guys got on base via the hit, except for Abreu and it's Pollock too. So everybody else was in the hit column. So it's good to see these guys doing damage, especially Timmy continuing his torrid start to the season. Nice.
Yeah, let's talk about TA here. So he had a couple hits. Nice to see him have three hits today. I think that is his fifth already this year. So 5 3-hit games for TA. And we talked about it a little bit with Vinny, but it was a beautiful double play from TA and Josh Harrison. And I tweeted out, finally, the White Sox do cool shit. It was very, very, very nifty, the double play that TA and Josh Harrison turned. I don't know what you thought about it when it happened.
Very heads up. I did not. I knew a guy was at second. I was like, "What? Okay, great play." And Josh Harrison with the wherewithal to know I gotta tag him quickly and get this ball out to first base because we runners coming down still. And he's been nothing but spectacular at the defensive end. Bat leaves a little bit to be desired, but his glove plays. As we talk about Timmy with his nine errors, Josh Harrison is the antithesis of that because he's been nothing but spectacular with the glove. But Timmy starting that off, having the wherewithal to see the runner was a little too far off the bag, getting Josh Harrison the ball quickly, and then Josh Harrison delivering a strike to Jose Abreu.
Yeah, and what I also like to see, too, was some stolen bases. We saw T.A. steal a base and then advanced on an error. We also saw Luis Robert steal a base. So let's quickly update Luis Robert's 40-40. I guess it's 30-30 watch. He is now up to 6 stolen bases on the year, 4 home runs. You said 30-30 at the start of the year. You also said 40-40, but let's go for the first benchmark there first for 30-30. How you feeling about Luis Robert on May 10th, going for that 30-30 with 4 home runs and 6 stolen bases so far?
Perfect. He's right there. I know the numbers probably won't reflect into a full season, but the weather's getting better, as everybody says. Balls will be carrying out for Luis Robert. His home run stroke is not even there yet. He hadn't even played his favorite team yet. I mean, did he play versus the Royals? Or was he out that whole series? I think he might have been out. But that's his favorite team to play against. He murders Kansas City. When he goes down there later this month, he'll murder them again. So, yeah, let's see. I'm looking at the game log right now. He hasn't even played Kansas City yet. So, yeah, I'm very excited to him to get at least 10 against some people. And that'll be a third of where I need to be. And he also, I think, crushes Minnesota. So, Minnesota is in trouble.
Minnesota.
When my man comes back to his full strength. So, yeah, 30-30 is going to be easy, breezy, beautiful. Cover girl.
We will see. I don't know about that. And the other play, too, there was a – yeah, Greg Miller says, are we good with the base running blunder? I would say that for the most part, the Sox have been good at base running. Their steal success has been high. And I understand people are going to bring up the fact that Joe McEwing has a lot of people thrown out at home. This is just a very low run scoring environment, and they're being aggressive to try to score runs. I don't hate it. The base running fundamentals are fine. They're being aggressive with sends, but they can fix that. The actual base running, the technique is fine. I am now thinking about it, except for when they're going into first base and lunging, but we haven't seen that shit since Minnesota.
I think Greg Miller's referring to the Anderson base running blunder at second
base. And what I was saying, sorry, I could explain that a little bit. Thank you, Steven. So Moncada hits a ground ball to, I think it was the second baseman. Everyone's shifted over. So Ramirez, who is shifted, basically playing shortstop. The shortstop is basically in center field, short center field, and the second baseman is well over. The ball was hit towards Ramirez, in between Ramirez and that second baseman. Ramirez goes to cover the bag. He drops the ball. T.A. sees it, gets away from him. T.A. starts running towards third base. Ramirez catches up to him, tries to tag him, drops the ball again. T.A. thinks he's tagged out, doesn't realize Ramirez drops the ball. T.A. gives up on it. He's tagged out. Moncada stays at first. So that was a base running blunder. But my point is, I think that is a mistake that needs to be cleaned up. But when the guy goes, 3 for 4, drives in 2 runs, has a stolen base, and had that nifty double play, I guess I was saying, it's all right. He was mostly a difference maker tonight for the Sox. So I'm not going to bash TA too much for that one.
And I didn't see that live, but I did see it afterwards. I don't mind mistakes of aggression. And I don't mind him thinking he was tagged, because he was, and then giving up because he thought he was tagged. He probably felt the ball in the glove, or just at least, hey, glove tags me, I'm out.
Yeah, and I would I'm like not him too, to be to I'm give not up too, less quickly. Like, I mean, that's the thing is he felt the tag and then immediately gave up. I didn't see if he had eye contact with McEwing. I saw that he was obviously running towards McEwing, but it didn't even look like McEwing was giving him any signals. So I would like TA to stick with that play a little bit more, just keep running until the ump gives you a signal. But oh well, I mean, they still won the game. I'm not going to bash it too much. And like you said, it's in this name of aggression, so I don't mind it.
And I'm fine with that. Yeah, try to get runs. Try to steal runs. And you were talking about stolen bases. As I said before, Adam Engel's stealing there when T.A. had the 0-2 count. Quantrill throws that ball inside on his hands, and he insides it, outs it to right field, right over the first baseman. I kind of like that Tony is putting the onus on the guys on the bases to get the job done. I wish he would have did it more with the sack bunt. Instead of sack bunting there, go with Adam Engel stealing, straight stealing that bag. They call him the Man of Steel for a reason. That's his Twitter handle. Let him steal the bag. Let's do it. Come on. So I like the aggression on the bags. While everybody else is zigging, let's zag. Home runs are in vogue nowadays. Let's be that Cardinals of the 80s team. The Willie McGee's.
Vince Coleman's. I love home runs. I would love to see more home runs. The thing that I love is just the aggressiveness and it paying off. The White Sox have now stolen, they stole two bags tonight. So that means that they are now up to 17 stolen bags on the year. But they are 17 of 18 on stealing bags. Efficiency. I mean, that's just incredibly efficient right there. And that's the part that I love. 94 percentile when you're stealing a bag, 94%. I think the MLB average is being thrown out like 75% of the time, or a successful steal 75% of the time. So the fact that they're that much better than teams is a true difference maker, and that's great to see. It's just the other small ball stuff. Like, I don't need to see bunts there. I love the stolen bases though, especially with how many balls are in play. Let's keep doing that, because we've seen so many infield singles or infield dribblers turn into runs and be game winning runs for the Sox.
And also, with stealing being down, catchers are not in the rhythm of throwing guys out at second. So let's test them. Let's see if they can throw us out. Let's see if the catchers are up to the challenge. And Pilskin says 94% chance Reese throws out the opposition. That's a guy who's used to throwing out people. He doesn't give a damn. On his feet, on his knees, he's throwing you out. If his pitcher gives him a chance to throw a guy out, Reese has got the job done. So, yeah, I'm a fan, especially with Luis, especially with Adam Engel. Timmy a little lesser because I need him to be more focused on good base running, but I don't want him to be hurt on the bases, though. So, Timmy's not as fast as those two guys. He's got speed, but I think Luis and Engel get the green light 100% of the time. Timmy can pick and choose when he wants to steal. But for the most part, you have people at second, third, fourth position in the batting order who are there to drive you in.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we will have the rubber match between the Sox and Guardians. 12:30 pregame with me and Herb. 1:10 first pitch, and then we will have the postgame show after. Vince Velasquez versus Aaron Civale.
Do you know Eli Stein, who's in Israel, predicts that tomorrow the White Sox will score 11 runs and zero for the Guardians, yeah, and the Sox will win. Do you know why he knows that?
Because it's tomorrow already.
Exactly. He's already got the almanac. He already knows. Exactly. He's already seen the game.
He has that All-CHGO membership. Vinny's already published his game article.
What am I going to have for dinner tomorrow, Eli? Please put that in there. Is it good? I mean, it's not that late in Israel. What am I having breakfast tomorrow?
Yeah, make Herb's mind up for him. Paul Smith also saying, any update on Lynn? Rick Hahn, different Rick. Rick Hahn mentioned that yesterday that it looks like early June for Lance Lynn's return. So that's your update on Lance Lynn. But we got Civale versus Vince Velasquez. How are you feeling about that matchup, Herb?
Aaron Civale gives the White Sox trouble. Anecdotally, I think he gives us trouble more than what Quantrill is, even though his ERA coming into today was sub one. So Civale to me is more a scary pitcher than what Quantrill is. And it might be totally different. I just feel like when Aaron Civale goes to the bump, it's going to be troubles for the White Sox. I'll look it up and we'll have the research done for tomorrow's pregame at 12:30 here on CHGO. But I'm not like as thrilled as I was with Plesac and Quantrill going to the bump. We need to get this series victory. Vince Velasquez has pitched very well the last couple starts he's had, so I'm confident in him. Not Lucas Giolito, he's confident, but I'm confident as a fifth starter goes. Just keep us in the game. Five innings, four on runs or less. That's all I ask.
And it's funny you mentioned Savale. Savale has had 7 games against the White Sox and has had a decision in every single one. He's 4-3 against the Sox, but with a 5.14 ERA, 35 innings pitched, 20 earned runs allowed, but 35 strikeouts. So it's been pretty much hit or miss with Savale. He's either really good against the Sox or really bad. Last year, I think he had 2 starts against the Sox, 1 in Cleveland, 1 at the G-rate. He went 6 innings at the G-rate, 5 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 4 Ks. And then at Progressive, this was later in September, 1 2/3, 7 hits allowed, 7 earned runs, 4 home runs allowed. So, I mean, the last time they saw him very, very well.
Let's do that. That sounds much better. 4-3 with a 5 ERA, I'll take that. And if the White Sox feel confident against him, that's even better for them because I need this series victory. We've only beaten the goddamn Detroit Tigers in this AL Central. Like, we should be dominating these people. And we should show Cleveland, like, enjoy your win. We should have a sweep. Enjoy that one win, brother. But then go back to Cleveland because you're the only people going there because no one wants a vacation in Cleveland.
Nobody wants a vacation in Cleveland. Thank you, Joakim Noah, and thank you, Herb Lawrence. You can follow him on Twitter at EchnerWall23. You can follow the show on Twitter at @CHGO_White Sox. You can follow me on Twitter at @Sean_W_Anderson. We will talk to you tomorrow. Again, the pregame is at 12:30. We have the Guardians versus the Sox, and first pitch will be at 1:10, and then we'll also have the postgame after the show to recap Velasquez versus Savale. But we will see you tomorrow. Thank you to Stephen Nicholas for your great production, and go Sox. And thank you to the 1979 album Tusk and Fleetwood Mac for all of their members for putting together that great piece of music there.
I think you were so flustered last night you didn't thank them. You thanked them in the pregame, but you didn't thank them in the postgame, and maybe that won for us.
I'll do my best. So maybe I'll do my best to remember.
Stop thanking that terrible album.
Guys, okay. All right. Reed Detmers 2 outs away from a no-hitter right now for the Angels.
I don't know who Reed Detmers is.
Reed Detmers was picked after pitcher. Garrett Crochet.
Correct.
He was picked after Garrett Crochet, so that's not good to hear. Surprised he's doing that to a Rays lineup.
It's 12-0, too. They've been battering him, too, and he just sat down for the 8th inning where they scored 4 more damn runs.
Mike Trout had a home run in that game, too, so a lot to watch out for with that Angels team. I'm glad we don't have to see them a ton. All right, that's going to do it for the CHGO White Sox postgame show. Thank you to Vinny. Thank you to Herb. Thank you to Steven. Thank you to Fleetwood Mac for the 1979 album Tusk. Thank you to me for hosting the show. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Go Sox, baby.
Six.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.